Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai, 31 years. Wow. I took this week off, so what do you think I did all week? I went surfing.
Damn right.
And the waves were fantastic. The water was freezing. But the swell was there. The power in the ocean was just awesome. I'll tell you all about that coming up as well. With this whole COVID-19 pandemic, I am truly lucky to be able to escape to the ocean. But I thought all week, where else do I like to escape during COVID-19? And one of the places I really enjoy going to, that's free. God bless it. It's free. Which really can take you away from it all. Is a tiny little airport in the San Fernando Valley called the Apollo Field, where I watch mostly men, I'm told there are some women, but mostly men, fly remote-controlled jets, planes, and helicopters. And I really enjoy going there with my little grandson. It's something that you should think about. It really is a relaxing place to be. And when I sit there for hours, I can't help but take in the whole idea of the beauty of what is going on. There's more than just controlling an airplane going on in front of me. The whole idea of remotely controlling is really what our lives are made up as well. So since I believe the world of art, the world of sports, the world of surgery are the same, where do you see the idea of remote controlling something? In this case, an airplane, a helicopter, a jet. But what about remote controlling a person? Well, in art, the director of a movie is remote controlling those actors. And in sports, the coach, when done right, is remotely controlling the athlete. So I started to think about the ultimate flying idea of remote control in art. And it's none other than Alfred Hitchcock in 1963 made a thriller movie, one of the most famous of all time, called The Birds. Over 300 seagulls and black crows and ravens. Ray Berwick was the animal trainer. Getting these birds. I mean, I understand you can train a dog and you can train, you know, like in the circus, but how do you train a seagull to attack somebody, which is what the movie's all about? It really is a thriller, but he did it. And the technical aspects of this movie, wait till you hear about it. You're going to hear from him and you're going to hear from the 11-year-old girl, Vern Cartwright, who's now a grown woman, about how he technically pulled this off, hiding seeds and meat, pieces of meat around their neck in their hair, so the animals, the birds, would swoop down and attack them. It's a phenomenal illustration of the technical difficulties and the technical aspect of remotely controlling a flying object, in this case, a bird. What about in sports? For me, the ultimate example of remotely controlling an athlete is the coach sitting on the bench. And nobody's done it better or as good as John Wooden. You talk about greatest coaches of all time. The guy that we seem to not talk about because we're chauvinistic is the coach of the University of Connecticut women's basketball team, Gino Auriemma. This guy has won more games than anybody. But there is a secret to the sauce that he uses. And the secret is nurturing. Kobe Bryant's daughter, Gigi, was about to become the Kobe Bryant of women's basketball. But she needed to go to college to learn, at least for 1 year. That's where she wanted to go, was to the University of Connecticut. Wait till you hear his speech at Kobe Bryant's memorial of what it was like to deal with Kobe, who wanted to learn what it would be like to coach a girls' basketball team. Kobe as the student. And the nurturing ability that Gino Auriemma has for his players is almost like a father figure. And that's the reason for his success. That's how he can remotely control these girls better than anybody else. It's the nurturing. And when he speaks at Kobe's memorial, you can hear it and you can feel it. Clapper Vision is going to be about my favorite football player, Joe Burrow, the quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. He didn't just tear his ACL, but he tore his medial collateral ligament as well. I'll get into deeper the Clapper Vision when I open up the phones in the clinic. But the Clapper Vision will be, why do we have to operate on the ACL and not the medial collateral ligament? Why will that go on to heal all by itself? Well, the Clapper Vision for your knee is it's a house. When you break the window on the side of the house, yeah, the air can come in, the rain can come in. You violated the closure of the house. That's the medial collateral ligament, the window on the side of the house. But if that tornado somehow breaks the structural beam in the center of the house that keeps the roof over the house, that's your anterior cruciate ligament. You can't just put some paper or plastic over the structural beam like you can to cover the broken window. You affect the structural beam, the whole house can collapse. And that's what happens when you tear your ACL. The anatomy, which I'd love to go into, of the medial collateral ligament is fascinating because the ligament is taut when you fully extend your knee. But when you flex your knee or bend your knee, because of the orientation, the diagonal angle of the back half of the medial collateral ligament, in flexion, there's actually a little bit of wobble room. There's a little bit of mobility that's allowed in our knee so that we can deal with uneven terrain. Your knee is a hinge, but it's not like a flip phone where it cannot withstand any kind of rotation. Your knee can withstand a little bit of rotation as it's flexing because of the diagonal nature of the back half of the medial collateral ligament. The design of our body, after 31 years of being an orthopedic surgeon, still doesn't cease to amaze me. And I have to fix these structures when they tear. So you better understand not only the gross anatomy of what you see, but you better understand the subtle anatomy that's even deeper. And speaking about understanding the subtle anatomy, it's the subtle nature of remote control that I want to get into. And I want to get into it first with Alfred Hitchcock. In the next segment, we'll get into it in sports. But let's go, Steve Paulette. Let's go to number one with Alfred Hitchcock.
Mr. Hitchcock, do you like birds?
I'm quite indifferent to them. They serve their purpose on occasion. Mm-hmm.
Which purpose would that have been for you?
Well, it was a matter of making a little movie about them. Mm-hmm. A modest little affair, mm-hmm. I may say so.
Are you really modest about this picture, or do you like it particularly?
Well, it's different, you know, and one always tries to meet a challenge. I think just doing an ordinary picture of what I call photographs of people talking mm-hmm. is rather dull.
Let me translate. Mr. Hitchcock, what do you think about birds? Do you love them? Do you have a warm place in your heart for them? His answer? No, I could care less. I just needed them because I wanted to make a scary movie. There's absolutely no nurturing in this guy's idea of remote controlling the birds. It's all about the technical aspect. He wants to make it look like these birds are actually attacking a town and all the people in the town. If you want to be scared this holiday, go rent that movie. Number two.
So the challenge was to take the subject and see if it could be made to work.
I think there was a rather particular challenge about this picture, which was working with birds, really. Was it very difficult?
That was the technical challenge. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a very involved technical process, mm-hmm. and the mere fact that I am able to shoot a picture, to photograph a picture, mm-hmm. with the cutting in mind.
The technical challenge, which we're going to learn by talking to Jason Mansfield, the president of the remote control organization called Valley Flyers. Yeah, the electronics, the gyroscope, how to move the flap. The technical aspect of the plane is one thing. But when you go and watch these folks, these remote control pilots, the nurturing and how they feel about these planes, it's like it's a child to them. So it's a beautiful marriage of the technical and the nurturing. As far as nurturing, with Alfred Hitchcock, he ain't trying to be an expert in that. But technically, that's where his wheelhouse is. Number three.
We were able to train the birds for each individual cut. Mm-hmm. In other words, we couldn't take a necessary whole long scenes and mm-hmm. expect the birds to behave mm-hmm. For about 4 or 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But the manner of the montage permitted the bird to be trained for a very short period, such as flying after a child and landing on its shoulder. Mm-hmm. Then I would be able to go to a close-up of it biting and so forth.
Biting the child. You believe this maniac? One of the greatest movie directors of all time. And finally, with Alfred Hitchcock, number four.
The birds, I mean, looked rather terrible, were they, actually?
The seagulls, miot you call them, mm-hmm. the seagulls are vicious. They are scavenger birds. And the trainers, when handling them, had to wear very heavy gloves because mm-hmm. instinctively they bite because mm-hmm. they're always catching fish and mm-hmm. so forth. The crows, the corbeau, they were to be trained. They varied. Some were vicious, some were very friendly. Mm-hmm.
Now I want you to hear from some of the actors who were involved with making the movie. Vern Cartwright was the 11-year-old girl. Rod Taylor was the man, the grown man in the movie, and certainly Tippi Hedren. Now let's hear their perspective, what it was like dealing with a technical genius, getting these birds to act in a movie. It's the craziest thing in the world. Let's listen to number five.
And there was a trained gull called Charlie who they would wire their beaks so that they, you know, wouldn't hurt anybody.
He was on long wires, and his beak had been bound with some sort of tape and his claws, so that if he actually did hit me or anything, because I think I had seed in my hair so that he would dive down to me, then he wouldn't hurt. But the string broke. And he started going out to the bay.
Bodega Bay, that's where they filmed it. Number six.
There were very low tides at Bodega Bay, and these sand flats stretched for miles. And it was nothing to see one of these poor wranglers running after a seagull that was flopping along just 6 feet ahead of him for miles.
And they couldn't get Charlie back in again. And poor Charlie with the beak, you know, wired up. They thought, oh, what with this poor thing, what's going to happen? But they did. He did come in.
The SPCA was on the set a lot. And the script girl actually started to be a great protector of these birds. And they actually built an aviary onto the set for birds that had been hurt or injured, and she would take care of them.
How do you keep these birds contained? You literally had to put a net around the entire operation. Number seven.
They had to net the whole set.
The inside of the house was inside yet another canvas house, so that when all these damn birds got out, which they would, of course, the poor wranglers could catch them.
And then the camera would poke through a hole. And they had crates in the back of the chimney with these, like, pull-out things. And then they would pull them out, and the birds would swoop down.
And number eight?
Ray Berwick, who was the main handler, he had a crow or a raven, I believe he was, named Buddy. And Buddy was trained, and so he was sort of like the leader. He could tell him when to peck your hand and do things like that.
There was one named Buddy, very beautiful raven, who I became friends with. In fact, he was so nice, he couldn't even be in the movie. He was so sweet. And he'd come hopping into my dressing room on the set, and he'd hop up on my dressing table, and he was just fun. It was just, you know, they're so smart.
Here's where Vern Cartwright, as an 11-year-old girl, one of the stars of the show, here's where you get a glimpse of the technical expertise that Alfred Hitchcock enjoyed, the technical aspect of remotely controlling the birds and the audience, for that matter. Number nine.
A lot of those birds were cardboard cutouts and sort of stuffed birds that were all put on the wires, and they just kept adding to them and adding to them. And I asked him, ever the curious child, I asked him, I said, well, isn't it going to look fake on camera? And he says, no, because he interspersed real birds with them. And he says, your eye, it's the illusion. You see movement from one, you assume that they're all moving. And it's absolutely true. You sit there and you watch that movie and you could swear that they're all moving just by interspersing live ones here and there. I mean, he had so many things.
You want to hear what it sounds like with that movie and what makes you scared, especially Ben Lyons here at 710 ESPN? Listen to number 10.
He would just show you the blocking of where you would be and then just took the reactions as they came. They had hammerheads, you know, with birds' heads on them, and they would have these, like, hand puppets and all sorts of things that had bird heads on so that they could control them and stuff. And those were heads on hammers. And then they just had the prop people standing behind just beating the door so it would actually get the actual looking like it was ripping through.
Now listen to the remote control master, Alfred Hitchcock, answering the young girl, Vern Cartwright, the 11-year-old, as she says to him, but you have us pretending to open a door, but there's no door. Ah, this is the technical aspect of remote control in the art world, making movies. Number 11.
This is film. This is the illusion of movie making. You know, and indeed I had to reach off camera and open a door that wasn't there. So when I opened the door, indeed, the light came on as if the daylight was streaming in the door. And nobody in the world can say there wasn't a door there.
I said, well, aren't you going to know that there's no door there? And he says, but how would I be able to see you? And he said that it's all done with light. And it's true. I mean, Rod Taylor goes like this, and he pulls it, and the shadow hits it. Nobody knows there is not a door there. And he said to me, that's the magic of movies.
The magic of movies is in the technical expertise in remotely controlling what you're seeing, be it the actors, be it the birds. Believe it or not, this topic today of remote control is actually something we all need to learn in our lives. And coming up next, you're going to hear the nurturing aspect of how to remotely control our world from Coach Gino Auriemma. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Get smart.
Just what are you getting at?
Check out the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Like this.
Medical advice from Cedars-Sinai, head of orthopedic surgery.
Are you kidding?
With a Far Rockaway attitude and a little drizzle of mozzarella.
Well, it's important to me.
Search Weekend Warrior in the space bar.
Like this.
And click on Doc's picture.
I see.
Like, follow, and enjoy the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
All right, it's Max. You know there's no better way to start your Saturday morning than with my friend Dr. Clapper and the Weekend Warrior Show.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Google the Guggenheim.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN. 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Rocket Man.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. When you visit the Apollo Field in the San Fernando Valley and watch the remote control pilots, and we'll be hearing from the president of that organization, Jason Mansfield, at 8:15. It always amazes me, why does that pilot choose that particular plane? Why did he pick a jet? Why did he pick that color on the airplane? Why do you pick that device and not someone else? This is the same thing a coach has to go through. This is the same thing the director, when you watch Tippi Hedren's screen test for the birds, what was it that Alfred Hitchcock was looking for? Well, nobody nurtures a remote control situation better than the winningest coach in women's basketball, Gino Auriemma. Let's hear who he is first as you hear him introduce himself at Kobe Bryant's memorial. Let's go to number six.
I'm Gino Auriemma, and I'm the coach of the UConn women's basketball program. And a lot of people are going to talk about basketball today. And I don't know that that's why I'm here. I'm not here for the basketball part. I tried to write a long, flowing speech about basketball, and I can't do it. There's too many thoughts in my head ever since Vanessa asked me to speak. Too many things that made me realize more that I'm here as a father, not as a basketball coach.
He's breaking up. You can feel the passion, the love in that guy's heart. But let me tell you something. He is one tough dude. He's tough on the girls. He's tough on the game. But he brings the nurturing aspect of remote control. He is picking the right kind of player. Just like those pilots have to pick the right kind of plane for them, he's got to pick the right kind of player to be on his team. It's not an individual sport, basketball. How do you pick the right player? How do you pick the right plane? How do you pick the right actor? Let's listen to this tough guy talk about who gets to be on his team. Number one.
Recruiting enthusiastic kids is harder than it's ever been, because every kid watches TV and they watch the NBA or they watch Major League Baseball or they watch the NFL, whatever sport they watch, WNBA, it doesn't matter. And what they see is people just being really cool. So they think that's how they're going to act.
Number two.
They haven't even figured out which foot to use as a pivot foot, and they're going to act like they're really good players. You see it all the time. You see it at every AAU tournament. You see it every high school game. So recruiting kids that are like really upbeat and loving life and love the game and have this tremendous appreciation for when their teammates do something well, that's hard. That's hard. It's really hard.
How do you decide which plane that you feel you can handle, that you can remotely control? Maybe a jet is too much for you. Maybe a helicopter is too much for you. Number three.
So on our team, me, my coaching staff, we put a huge premium on body language. And if your body language is bad, you will never get in the game. Ever. I don't care how good you are. If somebody says, well, you know, you just benched Stewie for, you know, 35 minutes in the Memphis game a couple years ago. Yeah, I did. Oh, that was to motivate her for the South Carolina game the following Monday. No, it wasn't. Stewie was acting like a 12-year-old. So I put her on the bench and said, sit there.
Number four.
It doesn't matter on our team. Now, the other coaches might say, well, you can do that because you got three other, you know, All-Americans. I get that. I understand that. But I'd rather lose than watch kids play the way some kids play. I'd rather lose. And they're allowed to get away with just whatever. And they're always thinking about themselves. Me, 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 me. I didn't score, so why should I be happy? I'm not getting enough minutes. Why should I be happy? That's the world that we live in today, unfortunately.
This coach is an expert in remote control. But his expertise. Yes, he's a technical expert, but he's really the best that there is in the nurturing aspect, being a father figure to these girls. Number five.
And kids check the scoreboard sometimes because they're going to get yelled at by their parents if they don't score enough points. Don't get me started. So when I look at my team, they know this. When I watch game film, I'm checking what's going on the bench. And if somebody's asleep over there, somebody doesn't care, somebody's not engaged in the game, they will never get in the game, ever. And they know that. They know I'm not kidding.
And now let's hear him talk about Kobe Bryant, who wants desperately to be a coach, to learn from the best, to learn from Gino. And Gino's interaction with Kobe as a coach and with Gigi, his daughter. This is fascinating. Number seven.
And how ironic that he would talk to me about coaching. The uncoachable one wants to talk about coaching. Probably the most uncoachable player in the NBA during his career wants to know about coaching. And I wanted to know why. He said, I'm coaching my daughter's team. I said, oh my God, that poor kid.
Number eight.
So when I watched highlights of her playing, and on about the third or fourth time she touched the ball, Gianna passed it when she was open. I thought, she's not listening to her father.
You gotta love this guy. Number nine.
So he would call and say, what kind of defensive drills should I do? We have practice tonight. We're going to work on defense. What do you think is the most important thing in teaching man-to-man? Further proof, he never listened to one word any of his coaches told him. So I tried to explain to him. I said, Kobe, they're 13 years old. I think you ought to just say, hey, you know, see the kid with the ball. Try not to let her go by you and see if you're guarding the other guys. Hey, see the kid with the ball over there. Don't let her throw the ball to your guy. Keep it kind of simple, you know?
I love it. Number 10.
He said, no, I want to know, like, what are the rotations when they drive? I said, come on, come on, come on. So these are the conversations that we have both as basketball people and as dads who have ever coached their kids. If you've ever been in that situation, like a lot of people here in this room probably have been. And I remember when Gigi came, as you saw in that video, she came to our the very first game that she came to, and she came into the locker room.
Now listen, and this may make you cry, of how Kobe behaved as a dad. This is just awesome. Learning the nurturing aspect of remote control from the best who ever did it. Gino Auriemma, number 11.
And here she is. And the look on her face, the smile, the way her eyes just took everything in, how excited she was to be around, in her mind, royalty. It's ironic. Her father's royalty. And she's excited to be around royalty that looks just like what she wants to be.
And finally, number 12.
And the most impressive thing about that point in time was how Kobe stepped as far back as he could. So anyone taking pictures, anyone there, would not know that this was Kobe Bryant's daughter. This was her moment. This is where her time to shine. This was her time to experience all the things that he's experienced his whole life. He was being dad. He wasn't being Kobe Bryant. And he was allowing Gigi to be Gigi, not Kobe Bryant's daughter. In today's day and age, that's a hell of a thing for parents to be able to do.
The world of remote control, we need to learn it. And at 8:15, we're going to learn all about it because it does affect our lives, whether we're flying a plane or raising a child. You got to nurture, but you also need to know the technical aspects of it. And you know how much I love food. And you know my favorite thing to eat in life is pizza. And you know a lot about my favorite pizza places. But my favorite slice of pizza is the centerpiece my mouth is watering already. It's the centerpiece in a rectangular pie, a Sicilian pie with pepperoni on it. The problem is, talk about remote control. When you go into the pizzeria, you may not still have available the centerpiece. You'll have to have one from the edge or one from the corner. How do I remotely control the greatest slice of pizza that I want? A little bit later in the show, I'll tell you how I do it. I've mastered remote control in the world of pizza. Coming up next, I'll take your calls. The clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. That's 877-710-3776. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show every Saturday morning. Dr. Clapper and the great Steve Paulette.
Weekend Warriors on Facebook.
Didn't you get the memo?
Quickly hear Clapper's crazy kitchen stories. Easily find different callers' aches and pain issues.
All right, I get it.
Search Weekend Warrior in the search bar and click on Doc's picture.
Who are you again?
Voila! Like, follow, and enjoy the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Hey, it's Sedano. You know there's no better way to start your Saturday than when my guy, Dr. Clapper, and the Weekend Warrior Show, 7 to 9 a.m. Saturday mornings.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
From now on, I am not Robert Clapper. I want you to call me Smokey.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Smokey Clapper. That's the greatest.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. As the winds come up in the afternoon, occasionally I'll take a day and I'll go surfing. And I got a blue canoe. It's an 11-foot triple stringer, weighs 50-pound surfboard I had made in Honolulu, Hawaii. It looks like a blue canoe, practically. But I paddle that board through the thickest, heaviest waves with the spray of the ocean in my face. That board does not care what kind of chop there is on the water. It glides like a blue canoe across the water. It's the greatest. Ugh. All right, Warriors, and I will tell you how to remotely control your pizza and get that center slice of the pepperoni Sicilian pie. How do you do it, and where do you get it? My greatest pizza slice in the world, and it's here in L.A. But let's take the clinic doors and open them up. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Ark. Ark, thanks so much for calling back. I really appreciate it from last week because you got your MRI in front of you, don't you?
I certainly do. Thank you, Dr. Clapper.
Okay, so I'd love for you to read the impression part of the report. Read it slowly so I can interrupt with some Clapper vision. So let's go.
All right, here we go. Number one, glenohumeral joint osteoarthrosis with full thickness chondral denudation, subchondral cyst/edema, and exuberant inferior marginal osteophyte.
Okay, so let me just tell you right now, Ark, your situation with your shoulder is different than most of the folks that are listening right now. Why is that? And let's do a Clapper vision. We're going into your kitchen. There's linoleum on the floor in your kitchen. Uh-oh, you now spilled some water onto the linoleum floor. No problem. You're going to take a Bounty paper towel and you're going to put it on top of that little puddle of water, and no big deal because the linoleum is waterproof. It's completely sealing the floor, and that way the water can collect and the paper towel can scoop it up. But your shoulder has a linoleum surface that has full thickness damage. It's worn through, it's cracked. Now go try and spill water onto the linoleum in your kitchen that has a crack in it. What's going to happen? It's going to go, the water's going to go through that linoleum that's waterproof and start to collect over time and rot the wood that's underneath. The water's going to collect below the linoleum. That word that you just read, sub, which means below, chondral means cartilage, that's the linoleum, cyst. You're going to now start to collect fluid into the bone below the waterproof cartilage, below the waterproof linoleum, and you're going to now have no lubrication in your shoulder, less motion, painful motion, because you have arthritis. When you tear your meniscus, you tear your labrum, we're talking about little scratches in the linoleum. But when you're talking about full thickness tearing, that there's now damage in the wood underneath, you better not let that surgeon arthroscope your shoulder saying they're going to clean things up. Ark, you don't even need to read the rest of the report to me. Because you, when the time is right, when you say, I can't sleep at night, it's so painful, I'm having difficulty eating, you're going to need, and I do hundreds of these, a titanium new cartilage in your shoulder. You're going to need a shoulder replacement. You're not replacing the shoulder. You're really just resurfacing the worn out structures. And I talked about the water that you spilled in your kitchen. And you may say, there's no water in my shoulder. Yes, there is. The lubricating fluid, the motor oil that allows our joints to move without friction is called synovial fluid. That synovial fluid needs to stay in the joint and not go through the cartilage into the bone that's deep. Cartilage keeps that from happening. But when you crack the cartilage, now that motor oil, that synovial fluid, can collect as a subchondral cyst in the bone. That's what's going on. So don't let anyone talk you into a cortisone shot. Stem cells, PRP. There's no shampoo growing hair on top of my head. And I don't need these guys to talk you into wasting your money and your time that you're going to grow new cartilage. God gives us one set of teeth. He gives me one set of hair on top of my head. That's it. No one's growing that cartilage with just a shot. All right. So when you have had enough, you're going to need to have an implant. And I do thousands of arthroscopies over 31 years. No, don't give me new linoleum if the wood is rotten underneath. Don't work on the surface. Does that help?
Yes, Dr. Clapper, absolutely. Thank you.
But while I have you, read the rest of the impression. I don't want to leave you hanging, and I'll explain as well. Go ahead.
Okay. Debris/loose bodies are noted with attenuation of the inferior capsule.
So that means pieces of the cartilage have broken off like pearls in an oyster. Just a little bit of sand in that oyster, and it starts to grow and become a bigger and bigger pearl. You break off a little piece of that cartilage in your joint, and the nourishment from the synovial fluid, believe it or not, allows that small little piece of cartilage that broke to grow into a bigger rock, a bigger pebble in your shoe, and that's a loose body. Man, you must have a painful shoulder. You're a one tough Russian, that's for sure. I love it. All right, keep going.
Okay, number two, circumferential labral degeneration / near circumferential tear.
Correct. That's a description, which who cares what the linoleum looks like if you're telling me the wood is rotten underneath? Who cares what the labrum, which is the surface, looks like when you've got a subchondral cyst and full thickness cartilage loss? It's nice that they're mentioning it, but I don't need anyone talking you into labral surgery, which I know is going to fail. Don't give me a new brake pad on my car if the mechanic has told you the rotors are cracked. Capiche?
Capiche.
All right, what's next? Is that it?
No, there's a total of 6 points.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, number three, proximal biceps long head tendinosis.
So the biceps tendon, one of the cables, if you will, that's in there is frayed. That's not a reason for you to do surgery. that's an age-related situation, which, by the way, is taken care of when I do the implant in the shoulder. Go ahead, next.
Number four, supraspinatus tendinosis with fraying of articular fibers and low-grade intra-substance partial tear.
How old are you again, Ark?
49.
That's terrific. The fact that your rotator cuff, yes, it's beat up, but there is no full thickness tear in the supraspinatus in the rotator cuff, means that you can have a traditional, we call it an anatomic shoulder implant. You do not need a reverse implant. So I love that particular line. Okay, what's next?
Five, infraspinatus tendinosis with fraying of articular fibers and focal low-grade partial injury with subjacent traction cyst.
Great. So that also tells us that it's intact. The cable is still there. It's frayed, but if you had a full thickness tear in the rotator cuff, you would then need a reverse. So this is telling me what your anatomy is like, which allows me to do an anatomic shoulder implant rather than a reverse. Okay, keep going.
There is subscapularis tendinosis with interstitial edema superiorly and or low-grade injury.
Great. So low-grade is a good word. Your subscap has got the usual degenerative changes. That will be addressed at the time of the shoulder implant as well. I love it. Okay, next.
Okay, last one. Acromyoclavic clavicular joint osteoarthrosis slash hypertrophy abutting the cuff with trace adjacent bursal fluid.
Okay, so that means there's another bone spur, an icicle coming down, which is typical, but it's not a significant one. It means that your grandfather and grandmother gave you the DNA for arthritis, and it particularly has affected your shoulder in a way, as a 49-year-old, is impressive. So it's not anything to worry about. It just means you and I have to take care of your other shoulder, your hip, your knee, your lower back, because you have osteoarthritis heavily in your blood supply, if you will, genetically. So physical therapy for this, sure, you can go. I think it's going to be a waste of time. Pills and shots, forget about it. Do you have to do something tomorrow? No. This is something, hey, it bothers me once in a while. Okay, leave it alone. But electively, you will need to have this fix if the pain becomes something that really, like I say, keeps you up from a deep sleep, really limits what you can do. So this is very helpful, this study. You don't need any more tests to be done before surgery. You would need an updated x-ray just to be able to take the right kind of measurements. But most of the patients that I do, they go home the same day from this surgery. So you would be no different. And it's my pleasure, as I said before, Ark, to help. You can call my office and tell them that they can move you up. You don't have to wait 3 months. That's totally up to you. You can stay with whoever you are with right now. I'm not here to solicit patients, but it'll be my pleasure to help if you want me to. Thanks so much, because I'm sure you're educating so many of the listeners as well by revealing what's happening to you, and I very much appreciate that.
Thank you, Dr. Clapper. I appreciate everything you've said. Thank you so much.
All right. God bless you. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them, Ark. That's how you'll be thanking me. I really appreciate the follow-up and the ability to use some Clapper Vision and teach. Okay, Warriors, we'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. The lines are all lit up. I think I'm going to keep taking calls. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Holy emoji, Clapman. Weekend Warriors on Facebook.
Holy slip disc.
That's right, Robin. Hear listeners talk about their aches and pains.
Holy hamstrings.
Along with Doc's Clapper Vision.
Breathe deeply.
And advice to callers.
On your toes, Robin.
So like, follow, and enjoy.
A wise decision.
The Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Frankly, I can think of nothing more stimulating.
You're listening to The Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
The secret sauce.
Start your weekend off right, listening to The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
I will jump through the radio to come into your house and help you right now.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
The countdown starts. Watching it attracts. The crew is certain. Nothing left to chance. All is working. Trying to relax. Up in the capsule.
goes on. 4, 3, 2, 1.
The great Peter Schilling. Love it, because we're talking about remote control flying. All the songs today are hand-picked to make you think about remotely controlling something, whether it's a plane, whether it's an actor, and whether it's a bird in Alfred Hitchcock's movie from 1963, The Birds. All right, the clinic's open. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Sabrina from Irvine. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hi, Dr. Clapper. Great to talk to you. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, Sabrina. You have the coolest name. It makes you have to stop when you say Sabrina. There's no shortcut for that name, right? You don't have any nickname. You're Sabrina to everybody, right?
Well, my husband calls me Bree. So that's,
Give it to him.
Yeah.
How many years are you married to him?
35.
He's allowed to do that. I give him credit for that. How young are you, and what do you do for a living, and where'd you grow up?
Okay, I'm 61 years old. Nice. I grew up in the Bay Area, and I just retired this year as an elementary school teacher.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have the little ones who are now grown up come and say hi and introduce you to their kids?
Yeah, I see them all the time, all over the city I live in. So it's really great. Yes.
What did your father and mother do for a living?
My father was a diplomat. He was from Italy, so he was in the diplomatic corps. And my mother was a real estate agent.
Was your mother Italian also?
Yeah, they're both from Italy. So I totally relate to all your pizza, your food. Food is, you know, everything. So.
Oh, my God. And what part of Italy is the family from?
I can't wait to hear about your pizza. I'm so excited.
What part of Italy is your family from?
They're from sort of a little bit south of Rome. It's the county, the area is called Molise.
Wow.
It's near Sicily, but north of Sicily, Molise.
I'm a frustrated Italian, Sabrina. I take my family every summer to go to the marble quarries in Massa Carrara so that I can work in the same stone Michelangelo worked in. In fact, yesterday I was sculpting. So where do you live here in L.A.?
I live in Irvine.
If you ever make it to Manhattan Beach, you can see the outdoor studio I have where I'm working on a sculpture right now.
Actually, I'd love to. That sounds wonderful. Yeah.
It's right near the Manhattan Beach Pier. It's on 10th and Highland. Go take a look. You'll really get a kick out of it because that stone is from your neighborhood. All right. How can I help you? What you do to yourself?
Okay. I had a freak accident taking off my pants, my jeans. It wasn't holding on to anything. And I just fell. I twisted my leg. And I couldn't get my pants off and I fell. And it
this,
hurt.
Are you sure you're not Jewish? Because this sounds like an injury that only Jewish people get.
Well, I'm married to a Jew, so it's working on. Right.
Great. So he made you accident prone in a Jewish way. Jewish people can hurt themselves terribly just taking their pants off.
Exactly. So this is what happens after 35 years of marriage, okay? All right. So it hurt. And I mean, I screamed and I was crying. It was really painful. And then I said, no, this is fine. I just twisted my muscles, whatever. I don't know what happened. So I just kept going, but it was hurting really terribly. Just, I can't even explain it. And then it's like, now it's been 6 days. It's all puffed up. The pain is on the left side of my knee in a particular spot, which when I looked up the anatomy of the knee, looks like the meniscus. And at first, the pain radiated down my leg, maybe a muscle thing. That's why I thought it was muscular. But now that is gone, and the pain is just on that left side of my knee.
And all right. So are we talking about your right knee or your left knee?
Left knee and the outside of my left knee.
So that's the little toe side of your left knee?
Correct.
Okay. So that's the lateral meniscus. Are you sitting down right now?
I am.
All right. I want you to take your left hand and feel your left knee. Feel the kneecap. Can you feel that?
Yes, I can.
Now I want you to pretend the kneecap that you're feeling, which feels like an Oreo cookie or a poker chip, but let's pretend your kneecap, this circle, is a clock. I want you to feel 12 o'clock, the top of the circle, 12 o'clock. Then I want you to feel 6 o'clock.
Got it.
When you feel 6 o'clock with your knee bent, I now want you to take your finger, and I'm talking moving it slightly, millimeters. I want you to now press at 6 o'clock a little bit to the little toe side. Stay at that horizontal level of 6 o'clock. Is that where your pain is?
It's not a little bit over. It's more like an inch over.
Okay. So that, but it's at that level of 6 o'clock. That is the joint line. That means that what you hurt is actually not a muscle. And it's probably not a ligament, but it actually is the shock absorber cushion called the lateral meniscus. Now, here's the good news. At 61 years old, it is no longer a rubbery cushion like it was when you were 21. It's stiffer. Just pinch the skin on the back of your hand, and you and I can wait a half an hour for your skin to flatten. If you go find a 10-year-old and pinch the back of their hand, instantaneously the skin will flatten.
Correct.
The aging process literally is us drying out. And here's a clapper vision for you. It's as though you made a beautiful, being Italian, you'll appreciate this. You made a beautiful bowl of fresh spaghetti, pasta, and now you pour this beautiful, delicious marinara sauce on it, and you eat it right away. But you can't eat the whole bowl. You only ate half of it. But you forgot to put the bowl of spaghetti and marinara sauce in the refrigerator. So the next morning you wake up, you go into the kitchen, and what do you see? You see that the spaghetti strands and the marinara sauce, because you didn't put it in the refrigerator, has now dried out. That's what the collagen, which is the spaghetti strands, and the mucopolysaccharides, the marinara sauce, that holds us all together. It dries out like you forgetting to put it in the refrigerator. And so the beauty of it is that when you're 61, it's not that delicious pasta that you just cooked. It's more of the dried out bowl of pasta. And that means you hurt it severely by tearing it, by cracking it. But guess what? Just like a blister in your hand hurts, you keep rubbing it, it becomes a callus. As long as you, Sabrina, can straighten your knee and bend your knee fully, I don't care if you get an MRI and it says you have a torn meniscus. Don't let anybody operate on you. Leave it alone. A blister will become a callus. Don't let them shoot it with cortisone or stem cells or other cockamamie thing. No needles into your knee. There's a book I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Knees. Get a copy. I give the money
Dr.
to the homeless.
Clapper, I ordered it 3 days ago. I'm waiting for it. I already ordered it.
Okay. It'll show you exercises to do. And I don't need a physical therapist. I need you to ride a bike. I need you to walk in the pool. It'll show you exercises to do. Sorry for coughing.
That's okay.
That's what we're going to do with your knee. Now, God forbid, if your knee is stuck and you can't straighten or bend it, that's a different story. But I am optimistic that you will not need surgery, that this will continue to improve. It may take another 3-4 weeks, but I need you to hang in there, okay? If it persists in being painful for you, then you and I will need to get an MRI, and I'm more than happy to translate it for you. But definitely, you have, and I'm just going to make this up, 85 to 90% chance that you ain't going to need surgery on this knee.
Great. I'm
Does that help?
Yes, it totally helps. Can I use an elliptical, or do I have to
use
a bike?
Let pain be your guide, and let swelling be your guide. Don't overdo it. But right now, you're turning a blister into a callus. Be nice to yourself. Now, Sabrina, you're a total stranger. I never met you. I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I will, Dr. Clapper. Thank you.
God bless you, Sabrina, and thanks for checking in with us. All right, Warriors, coming up next, I'm going to tell some stories that relate to my guest at 8:15, the whole idea of remote control in art, in sports, and in life. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Trying to relax up in the capsule, sent me up a drink. Jokes, Major Tom. The count goes on.
Miss an interview or Doc's weekly story? Check it out on the Weekend Warrior Facebook page. Also, Doc's advice to callers on their aches and pains. Just type Weekend Warrior in the Facebook search bar and you'll see Doc's picture in the listings. And thanks for checking out the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.